Peter B. Collins News and Comment. It's Monday, August 7th, 2017. Washington's all cleared out, and that's a good thing. But as you will see, the wheels keep spinning and the tweets keep coming. Now, as you know, Donald Trump uses Twitter to get around the corporate media. And he's got some, 28 million followers on Twitter and another 10 million on Facebook. It's something like that. And he's not content with that. So in what appears to be a brainstorm of the late, great Anthony Scaramucci, who lasted 10 days as White House Communications Director, the Trump White House, actually, the program comes from Trump Tower. So Trump something. I don't know if it's a campaign entity. I don't know if it is the Trump organization or just maybe somebody operating out of the building. Secret Service couldn't manage a lease there, but who knows? So Kayleigh McEnany, who used to be a pro-Trump pundit on CNN, and I have to confess, I have never seen her act there, is now working for the Trump communications machinery, and she is hosting a 90-second feature called Real News. Now, that's obviously intended to trigger a Pavlovian response from the Trump base. Well, if it's coming from him, it must be real news because everything else is fake news. And so let's listen to a little bit of Kayleigh as she spins up the preceding week in Trump land. And there's a whole lot of spinning going on. I mean, this is more than a fidget spinner can do.
Hey, everybody, I'm Kayleigh McEnany. Thank you for joining us as we provide you the news of the week from Trump Tower here in New York. More great economic news on Friday. The July jobs report added a better-than-expected 209,000 jobs.
So there are a few things here. One is interesting that we just hear that this comes from Trump Tower. We understand it's being distributed on Trump's Facebook page. And Paul Ryan would be aghast because Kayleigh McEnany, or however she says her name, is exposing her bare shoulders in a summer fashion statement that would not pass muster at the Speaker of the House's office on Capitol Hill. At any rate, McEnany is doing spin work, and it's not a stretch to call it propaganda. Because in this first 90-second news report that she delivers, she claims that Trump has created a million jobs since he came into office in January. And it's not really true. We all know that. Now, there has been some positive job growth, but it's not even a pace to what Obama saw during his final year in office. And it's small numbers, but the advantage to Obama is about 10,000 jobs average per month. And so this is the kind of slick spin that you would expect from a PR firm or an ad agency. And it is full of fabrications and exaggerations. And, here and there you find an outright lie. And it's interesting to see that Trump feels that he can launch his own state media and that people will believe it. And I'm sure there are plenty of Trump boosters, the people who voted for him, who will lock in on this, they'll watch it on their smartphone, and they'll ignore any other reports that challenge the happy talk coming from Trump's captive media. So we'll see where this goes. It may have just been a trial balloon. It also may be the first round of what could be a bigger production where we get Kayleigh every day, or she does a half hour a week, or maybe they substitute her for the president's weekly radio address on Saturdays. I don't really know. Now, a new study conducted by the fine folks at the New York Times concludes that Trump bullshits about 69% of the time. Now, I substituted the term bullshit for fabrications and misstatements. Trump and his predecessors, the big difference is the magnitude of falsehoods and the exaggerations. PolitiFact rates just 20% of the statements it reviewed as true, and a total of 69% either mostly false, false, or pants on fire. So it's interesting, mostly, that the New York Times is willing to call Trump a liar and that he traffics in hyperbole, distortion, and fabrication. And it's, of course, quite true. But our corporate media has been very reluctant to call a lie an L-I-E. And this is an important break that represents this battle over information between Trump and the corporate media. Now, nominally, Trump and the Congress will not be back in Washington before the end of the Labor Day weekend. And Trump says that he's not on vacation. He calls it a working vacation. But he did us all a favor to get out of the White House while they refurbish the air conditioning system and do some other long overdue upgrades. And I don't really have a problem with that. But he's at Bedminster, New Jersey, one of his golf resorts. And what I think is justice is that he was rained out from playing any golf today. But while he is there, he has not stopped tweeting, and he has not stopped lying. Here's a tweet from today. Interesting to watch Senator Richard Blumenthal of Connecticut talking about hoax Russian collusion when he was a phony Vietnam con artist. Now, this is a typical technique of prevaricators, which is to project their own behavior onto other people. And the bet is that the people who believe Trump will continue to believe him even when he lies, but when he points a finger at an opponent and calls that person a liar, his supporters will remember that. So Trump went on, presumably in two or three tweets, "Never in U.S. history has anyone lied or defrauded voters like Senator Blumenthal. He told stories about his Vietnam battles and conquests, how brave he was, and it was all a lie. He cried like a baby and begged for forgiveness like a child. Now he judges collusion?" Well, there are outright lies in here. Blumenthal was fuzzy when he was running for office about his service during the Vietnam era. In fact, he didn't go to Vietnam. But I don't believe he ever lied about it. I don't believe he told stories about Vietnam battles or conquests or how brave he was. And so this is Trump's vivid imagination, which takes him well beyond the bounds of fact and any standards of credibility. And he doesn't care. Glenn Greenwald has a good think piece that was published over the weekend, headlined, "What's Worse, Trump's Campaign Agenda or Empowering Generals and CIA Operatives to Subvert It?" And Glenn Greenwald makes a number of really good points in here. I've linked to the article, so you can read it at your leisure. But he builds the case that Trump's campaign, such as it was a challenge to the deep state, to the entrenched national security power structure. He says, "Trump repeatedly affirmed policy positions directly contrary to longstanding bipartisan orthodoxy, and his policy and personal instability only compounded elites' fears that he could not be relied upon to safeguard their lucrative power-vesting agenda. Due to his campaign positions, his outsider status, his unstable personality, his witting and unwitting unmasking of the truth of U.S. hegemony, the embarrassment he causes in Western capitals, the reckless unpredictability, Trump posed a threat to their power centers." And that is accurate to a certain extent. And it's also true that it is the deep state that is leaking prodigiously, providing the anonymous sources to the corporate media that undermines Trump on this whole Russia narrative. And as you know, I remain skeptical. Bring me the facts and I'll accept whatever the facts portray. But at this point, I do think that Trump is starting to see the tide turn, where we still have no public evidence. And despite the activities of Bob Mueller, the special counsel, and the leaks that come from there about the impaneling of a D.C.-based grand jury last week — the grand jury has been around, but the news leaked last week — what Greenwald notes is that there is a hidden country within the United States, the so-called deep state. And he cites the Washington Post series from back in 2014, which described this in some detail as parts of the deep state not aware of other parts of the deep state, these little silos that have been established. And He says the last few weeks have ushered in more open acknowledgement of a subversion of Trump's agenda by unelected military and intelligence officials. And I've shared with you about a journalist friend of mine who thinks that I'm just on the wrong side of this story by seeking a fact-based narrative. And his point is that Trump's bad. We got to get rid of him. This is the opportunity to do that. So who cares? And I care, because once you and I allow the deep state and enable it to essentially run the show, they're not going to stop. And the Democratic think tanks and other groups, because they're using the Russia narrative to claim that Trump is illegitimate and that Hillary was a victim of this international plot to deny her the presidency. Well, the Democrats are now wedged in. Look at the way they are forced to support Jeff Sessions as Attorney General because Trump might fire him in order to fire Bob Mueller, the special counsel. Democrats supporting Sessions? I mean, that is the ugliest irony in Washington today. And they're also supporting General McMaster, who has been getting flack from conservative Republicans because he is too much of an internationalist and not an isolationist along the Steve Bannon lines. And again, you can criticize, and I do, these individual policies and the individuals. But we have the big picture of a deep state that is flexing its muscles and could push out this president. And while, like many Americans, I'd love to see Trump retire and spend the rest of his life playing golf or twiddling his thumbs or using a fidget spinner inside Trump Tower, I'm not willing to accept just any means to that end. Every day I like to pause for a second and thank the people who support my work here at the Peter B. Collins Podcast with your subscriptions. Anthony A. Bell just renewed his annual. I appreciate that. And Phoebe Frenette stopped by and bought a 24-hour pass for $1. Do you know about that? If you're not a subscriber and you're just itching to hear one of my fresh, in-depth interviews, you can come by and with just $1, get yourself a 24-hour pass to listen to that or any other restricted interviews on the site. They're all unrestricted 14 days after they post, but you get that benefit as a subscriber, the first dibs on our in-depth interviews. So go ahead and check in. I'd appreciate it if you take out a subscription today. And I just got hit with an unexpected cost. The mixing board, the console that I use to, run the microphones and the audio, is on its last legs. And last week, I had to order a new mixing console. Cost is about $500. It'll be here in a couple of weeks, and hopefully this baby won't crap out on me before then. But if you can help, I'd appreciate it. If you want to make a special one-time contribution to help with the new console, you can just go to peterbcollins.com. You click on Become a Subscriber. That takes you to the sign-up page. And at the bottom of the options, you have the opportunity to make a one-time contribution via PayPal. And I hope you will. And I appreciate your support of my work. On Friday, I mentioned the cruel hoax that Trump dangles before coal miners, like the ones he was cheered by in West Virginia when he went there for a campaign-style rally last Thursday night. And this hoax is being promoted by Ryan Zinke. He is the, momentarily he was a congressman from Montana. Trump made him Interior Secretary. He's the guy who rode into Washington on a horse on his first day at work at the Interior Department. Unlike Putin, he kept his shirt on, but he did arrive by horseback. Anyway, Ryan Zinke is real friendly with a lot of coal extractors. And he's doing them favors by lifting the restrictions which were never made permanent under the Obama administration. Obama had sharply restricted coal leases and coal mining on public lands and had ordered the companies that had licenses to dig coal to pay higher royalties to the government. But as a favor to the cronies, Zinke has rolled back the rate increases and is lifting the restrictions on coal mining on public lands. And that may have some impact, but The operators indicate that most of that coal is exported. So why would we dig up coal in the United States to create carbon emissions elsewhere in the world? There's only one explanation, and the word is greed. Benjamin Netanyahu's been under investigation, and I haven't said much about it, but it appears that this is getting very serious. It's a series of graft cases, two of them, involving illicit gifts and the potential of a major bribe in the purchase of, I think it was a submarine, from Germany. Yeah, submarines and missile ships. It was a $2 billion deal, and critics have said this could be the biggest corruption case in Israeli history, touching on deep conflicts of interest and national security. So we'll see where all this goes, but Netanyahu is under fire. It does appear that he could be indicted, including shortly in the next few months. A newspaper columnist, Seema Cadmon, wrote in Yedioth Ahronoth on Sunday that, let me see what that person wrote, Ari Haro signed a state's witness agreement. Ari Haro is the former chief of staff to Netanyahu. So it's getting pretty close to Benjamin Netanyahu, and they are also continuing to question his wife, Sarah. She was interviewed by police for the fourth time this past week as they investigate accusations that public funds were misused at the Netanyahu's official residences. And you may recall that Netanyahu's predecessor, Ehud Olmert, was just released from prison a month ago after serving 16 months for bribery, fraud, obstruction of justice, and breach of trust. Now, Olmert did step down voluntarily, but according to Israeli law, the prime minister does not have to resign if indicted. Also, Netanyahu is helping shut down Al Jazeera in Israel. Not only are they booting out the reporters by revoking their press credentials, they're also blocking viewers by working with cable and satellite networks to block the transmissions of Al Jazeera, and they're working to make that permanent. Now, what's fascinating here is Israel is joining Saudi Arabia and Bahrain and the United Arab Emirates in demonizing Qatar, the nation, the dictatorship, the oil-rich little emirate where Al Jazeera originates from. And I find this curious, because Israel and these Arab dictatorships are ganging up on what used to be an ally of the Arabs. Qatar is still a member of the Gulf States Council, and I still don't understand why Qatar is being singled out. They don't do anything that is any worse than what Saudi Arabia does, and the Israelis are accusing them. Here, quote, "Lately, almost all countries in our region determined that Al Jazeera supports terrorism, supports religious radicalization. And when we see that all these countries have determined as fact that Al Jazeera is a tool of the Islamic State, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran, and we are the only one who have not determined, then something delusional is happening here." Now, I'm sorry, this is highly exaggerated. And, you know, these are, again, claims that could easily be attached to any one of those parties. Here in the United States, the Democratic Socialist Party made a move after years of staying on the sidelines. At its biennial convention in Chicago over the weekend, they passed a resolution to endorse boycott, divestment, and sanctions aimed at Israel. More than 90% supported the resolution, so they didn't do it. It was done by a voice vote. And I find this interesting. This, of course, occurs at a time when the Congress is considering legislation to criminalize support of BDS targeting Israel. And it's also, I think, worth noting that the leading social democrat or democratic socialist in this country, Bernie Sanders, doesn't support BDS. When asked by Al Jazeera earlier this year, he said, "People will do what they want, but I think our job as a nation is to do everything humanly possible to bring Israel and the Palestinians and the entire Middle East to the degree that we can together. But no, I'm not a supporter of that," referring to BDS. Now, I'm sorry, Bernie, this is your Achilles heel. Your positions on Israel are fuzzy. They are not progressive. They don't reflect a real, true spirit of equanimity. And here in the rest of the quote, he says what must be done is that the U.S. has to have a Middle East policy which is even-handed, which doesn't simply supply endless amounts of money of military support to Israel, but which treats both sides with respect and dignity and does our best to bring them to the table. Bernie, that's what BDS is all about. North Korea says that it will not give up its nuclear weapons. This is in reaction to the United Nations sanctions that were passed against North Korea over the weekend. And, you know, I believe that sanctions are preferable to war or to some other form of military action. But they're usually meaningless. In the case of North Korea, we're not going to hurt Kim Jong-un or his core leadership group. We're going to hurt the little people who are starving already. And will it change his position? No. It actually will make him more intent, more determined, more persistent to continue on the path he's on. And we make a big mistake when we draw red lines and says, well, if North Korea develops a nuclear weapon and missiles that can launch them, then we're going to go to war. We're going to strike in a preemptive manner. And this is sheer madness. India has nuclear weapons. We didn't attack India. Pakistan has nuclear weapons. We've never invaded Pakistan to disarm them. Israel has nuclear weapons, and we don't even publicly acknowledge it. And we have nuclear weapons, which we rarely bother to mention when we're pounding other nations that have a nuclear wish. Does the possession of nuclear weapons mean that they will be used? No. And when you threaten people to try to deny them development of a nuclear weapon, it hardens that attitude. So I just think the psychology of all this is 180 degrees off course. Kim Jong-un is a petulant little madman. But he is not so mad that he would launch a strike against South Korea knowing that the United States would obliterate most of, if not all, of North Korea. And likewise, he's not going to attack the United States. But we're in an era where bullies get a lot of attention, where a bully like Kim Jong-un draws a response from a bully like Trump, and they can't let go. And it is this cycle of madness that could lead to a conflict on the Korean Peninsula. According to the governor of Washington State and his attorney general, that would be Jay Inslee and Bob Ferguson, Jeff Sessions is full of shit when it comes to statistics about marijuana. And it has to do with some of the technical issues of whether Washington State, which offers legal medical marijuana and legal adult use marijuana, are properly measuring the extraction of THC from marijuana that is used to make concentrates. Now, Washington officials say that after 3 years of legalization, there have been no further incidents at licensed extraction businesses. But Jeff Sessions is still hung up on one that exploded a few years ago. And it's that kind of intentional ignorance that unfortunately informs the Attorney General to the extent that he chooses to be informed. I want to commend the New York Times. I often criticize it, and I will continue to do so when the Gray Lady deserves it. But in a couple of articles published recently, one on August 1st and the next one today, they're focusing on the fact that there are many people who are wrongfully convicted or who take plea deals and go to prison because the prosecutor withheld critical evidence. And today, the Times focuses on a case in the Bronx of a nightclub bouncer named Aaron Cedrus or Cedars. I'm going to call him Cedars. And Cedars knew that after this altercation where one man suffered a broken jaw, There were about a dozen people involved in a skirmish, that there was video footage of it that would exonerate him. He urged his lawyer to get the footage, but the prosecutor, the DA, would not release it. And so as trial approached, Cedars had a difficult choice. He was offered a 5-year sentence on a plea deal if he would take a guilty charge. But he felt that he was innocent. He hung in there, and when he went to trial, the video footage was released, and I believe he was acquitted. In another case, published on August 1st, and I've linked to both of these in the show file for today's podcast, we look at the case of a woman named Nora Jackson, who was convicted of murdering her mother when Nora was merely 18 years old. And you can read the details of the case. It appears that Nora and her mom were not getting along, and the prosecutor exploited some arguments that they had had, some disputes, and they won a conviction, but the prosecutor had withheld critical information given to investigators from the critical witness who testified at the trial against Nora. And it took several years, but in 2014, the Tennessee Supreme Court unanimously overturned Nora's conviction. The bottom line here is that prosecutors who game the system, prosecutors who violate the law intentionally by refusing to release information that could undermine the charge or exonerate the defendant, those prosecutors never face any punishment whatsoever. Thanks for joining me for my daily news and comment podcast. It's free every day, and it's available on YouTube. I'm Peter B.
Happy trails to until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.